Mike Johnson, as always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, MJ?
It sounded like you just said Zimmer was a little bit big, like he cast a wide shadow. I don't know exactly what you're saying. Zimmer, I wouldn't take that if I were you when you come back. But anything that gets Bakes on the air more is good with me. Bakes is a beauty. One of my favorite guys around.
Yeah. Now, would you have, I asked, yesterday was on with Pooley, and their paths crossed right at the end of Pooley's career. So it was the battle of the checking centers on the radio yesterday. Would Jamie Baker have ever checked Mike Johnson into the ice back in your time?
Bakes and I were teammates. In Toronto, briefly.
Wow, okay.
My very beginning was his end of the time there. So, yes, we would have played against each other, I suppose. But we played together briefly when I first came to the NHL. So, yeah, I have known Jamie really since my first day that I started.
Okay, give me something good. He's going to be back in tomorrow. Give me something good that I can give him based on, you know, something I can hit him with tomorrow based on your time with him.
Interesting. I have to think about this one. I was so wide-eyed and terrified. I don't know if I spoke to him for the better part of the entire year because, a couple games my rookie year, the tail end of my first season. But he was wise beyond his years and actually kind of nice to the young guy. So I'm not going to give you any good material because he was a kind soul to a young Mike Johnson.
Yeah, Mike Johnson, of course, came into the NHL as a college free agent and immediately jumped into the NHL and. Yeah, I don't remember if we talked about this with you on Thursday or not, but Tyler Cleven looks like he's probably going to suit up maybe as soon as Thursday. What's that going to be like for him, do you think, that first NHL game?
It's going to be exciting. I will be there in the building, so I hope he does because it's something that I did exactly what he did. I only had one day between my college final game and my first NHL game. He's had a few, but obviously there's excitement. There's going to be a degree of emotion. He's probably had enough time to get some family and friends into Ottawa to watch that. My first game was in Tampa. So back then we didn't have, it wasn't so normal to fly your family around for your first game or whatever. So, I was just there by myself, but, the challenge will be, okay, so try not to be overwhelmed by the fact that, you're in the NHL and playing a game because, he's a good enough player that would probably have been the expectation. Probably try to not be overwhelmed by thinking out there and just sort of playing and reacting. That's a real challenge because you don't want to mess up. You're thinking about the system. You're thinking about the coaches and your new teammates, and you're not just playing. And the challenge will be, oh, yeah, it's the NHL. It's pretty good players you're going up against. So, all those things will make it more difficult, but it should be, fun and emotional and a special moment for him and his family. So, I'm looking forward to it. And the start of him, for him, like, well, what he hopes is 1,000 more because he wants a long, good career. He might be on a team that could have a pretty good one right now.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, last night, Sens beat the Panthers 5-2. And I'd say we're talking yesterday morning that this was the first time, like, Brady and Matthew have met each other, a lot of times, especially in that, in the pandemic All-Canadian season. It was nine times. But Matthew was in one conference, Brady's in another. You're not battling for a playoff spot. And they played each other earlier this season, but it was the early part of the season. And, 2 points then is the same as 2 points now. But it's always, we know it's different. At the end of the season with playoff, potential playoff spots on the line, it's a big deal. Do you feel like, not just based on last night, but do you feel like now, Brady said before yesterday, it's all business now. Do you feel like that's the way it'll play itself out going forward now when these two guys' teams meet each other?
You'd like to think so. Like, how many times can the entire Kachuk family get together to watch a game? I mean, they're going to come always to every game in Ottawa, between Florida and Ottawa, and every game in Florida. They might, but, it becomes less of an extravaganza and more like, hey, it's neat to play against my family, probably a good time for my parents to come around and we can all get together. But once they start to play, they're trying to play and they're trying to win. And I imagine if you're Keith and Chantel, they're thinking, Brady's going to knock Matt out of the playoffs. Like, that's where they're at right now. I mean, it's still pretty far-fetched that Ottawa obviously can get there. But Florida was right there, but all of a sudden they've lost four in a row, and I think they play Ottawa one more time. So, it will stop being such a special occasion, and it'll just be a game against my brother. We're going to have about 50 of them in the course of our career, so it'll just be about playing as well as we can. And last night Ottawa played well. Give them credit. The Sens were a good team. Brady scores the goal. Matt had plenty of chance themselves, rang the post and everything else. But, I don't think it'll quite be the box full of 50 people with a half Brady, half Matt jersey on. It'll just be, a game between the two brothers.
Yeah. you know, the Sens are, you know, results-wise, the last 10 games, you know, I think it's 3-6-1 in the last 10. But they've kept themselves, all the other teams are kind of spinning their wheels as well. So they've kept themselves on the fringes of the playoff race. It's still super slim opportunity for them to make it. They'll probably have to run the table to do it. All that to say, I mean, we've seen this before from the Sens where toward the end of the year, in past years when they've had no hope, they played well. And people said, oh, well, maybe that'll have an impact on next year. Does it feel like ending the year this year, if they play reasonably well in these last 8 games, does it feel like that will actually have a tangible impact on the start to next season? Or is next season, and this season is this season?
I mean, I hate to say it, but it feels like next year is next year, right? Like, I mean, what I think these games would do is if they get into this situation next year and are around the playoffs or in the playoffs, then they will have some confidence and some experience of what it's like to play late in the year when the points are at a premium and the playoffs are right around the corner and you're jockeying for position. And if they are in that spot, you know, maybe there's something to draw on there. But the idea that they'll take this lesson and be like, okay, now they're ready to go to start the year, wouldn't that have been the lesson last year too? Like, we played well down the stretch. We know how important the points are early in the season. We got to get them. And they didn't get them the way they needed to start this season. October, November weren't the months that they needed them to be. So that I don't know if we could say they'll take these lessons and make sure to be better situated in November and December so that they don't have to go on this furious rally. I don't think you can probably say that. I think it's going to be maybe if they get back in this exact situation, sure. Right. But to start the year, I don't know if it does much for them.
What is your thought on the Sens bringing Travis Hamonic back? He's a free agent at the end of this year. We kind of know, like, obviously, Cleven, they said he'll be in the mix to potentially make the team out of training camp. There's still Thompson and JBD down in the minors, and there is kind of an established five. Holden, I think, will probably be, I know this will be his last year in Ottawa. Do you think the way he's played this year, do you believe there's a spot for him, or do you think they potentially probably will need to move on?
So, I mean, obviously, financially, you'd assume that contract would be pretty digestible. Like, it's not going to, it won't be a financial issue with him coming back. If you put the top four of Zub, Sanderson, Chabot, and Chychrun, who are the other three? I'm assuming Brännström's going to be one of the other three. So now, who are the other two? Holden's under contract, if I'm not mistaken, for next year. So he's probably the seventh guy. So who's the other one?
No, Holden's done at the end of this year.
Okay, so you need two more. So now, is it worth having Hamonic around as a right shot guy, stabilizer, on an affordable contract? Or do you believe that the young players are good enough to fill those roles? Because you'd rather have them playing, quite frankly, than Travis Hamonic, all things being equal, because those guys will grow with the team, where Hamonic, at his age and point in his career, is not going to grow with the team to the point where the team can be competitive to win a Stanley Cup. So that's the conversation. Is it Plevin? Is it Bernard Dawkins? Is it Lassie Thompson? Like, which of those guys is better than Travis Hamonic next year? We know DJ likes him. You don't want all young kids at the bottom end of your roster. So Hamonic or somebody else like him, and maybe it's Hamonic because they know who he is. You know, maybe there makes sense there as the 6-7 guy. And hopefully, and I say that respectfully, but hopefully he doesn't get to play because somebody younger plays well enough to knock him out of the lineup. And he's just around as a veteran leader and not so much playing. Yeah, I mean, I could see that conversation for sure because, you know, I'm not sure they would know or feel really positive about Cleven playing 2 weeks or Bernard Docker or Thompson, like they are there just yet to take that spot on a full-time basis. So whether it's Hamonic or maybe another veteran guy out there, I could see them going that direction for the 6-7 swingman if everyone's healthy.
We know that you are a firm believer in the analytical side of the game and studying the numbers, the underlying numbers, that they're important in assessing a player's value. And Travis Hamonic's numbers this year are, you know, they're not terrible, but they're not great, you know, if we're being quite honest with ourselves overall.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's much doubt at all that he is he sets a culture within the room. Brady obviously, you know, is the ultimate culture setter, but Hamonic is a part of that as well. Are the culture guys, the veteran culture guys, is that an overrated part in putting a team together or not?
It depends how much you rate them. And like, so if they can play, then like, no, culture is not nothing. It does matter. And having guys who can help drive that and establish the way that people prepare and how they hold people accountable and how they treat each other in the room and how they push each other. all that does absolutely matter. But two challenges with that, JR, is that if you can't play, it's hard to be a culture setter. Well, you know, if you're never in the lineup or you're no good yourself, so you have to be kind of a functioning member of the team to kind of impact the culture that way, which Travis Hamonic most certainly still is. But you can't be just, you're playing because you're a good guy and not because you help us on the edge. You kind of need to be able to do both, or else the good guy stuff doesn't really take you very far. But I think Hamonic, I mean, you know, analytically, Ottawa's a surprisingly strong team this year when you look at some of their numbers 5-on-5. And the fact of the matter is that Travis Hamonic at 5-on-5 is, you know, basically 50% shot share, scoring chances, expected goals. He's kind of right on the number, which is, you know, slightly worse than halfway up the roster for Ottawa. But that's not bad for a sixth defenseman. You could live with that
right. For
a guy who does that and other things. Now, if he's like a 35% shot share guy and every time he's on the ice, he's in his own end, doesn't matter how good of a guy he is because he's not really helping you win games in the end. So I think his game is still the point where you cannot discount the importance of who he is and how he helps guide that team.
Our good friend Jason York was fond of saying, you know what's better than good in the room? Good on the ice. So
yeah,
to your point. Yeah. Artem Zub, he didn't spend any time killing penalties. I was going to go back and see whether this is a brand new thing or whether this is something that's been trending this way. And again, I don't know if it's injury related or whatever. He played the least amount last night of all the Sens defensemen. I want an overall thought from you. You've done a bunch of games. You watch other games. What do you think overall of Zub's game this year in their entirety?
I think it's been fine. It's been solid. You know, but that's kind of what he is, right? He's like the offensive lineman. The less you talk about him, probably the better he's playing. You know, he's not going to do stuff that's going to wow you. Not going to come up on the score sheet very often. He's there to help facilitate his partner because he generally played with a pretty good one. He's there to be a defensively stout and solid in his own end, and let the other guys go to work. So, I haven't noticed him playing at a level that, you know, you think you need to get him off the ice more.
Right.
I think it's, you know, he's been very much reflective of the whole team. Some pretty good moments, some less than perfect moments, but generally not too bad. But I just wonder if that's more a progression of the other guys. I think Jake Sanderson has been so good in ways that I and maybe the Senators did not expect him to be good in. Like, I think that to me is the bigger story. Not to mention, where's Zub's ice time gone? Well, it's gone to a guy that has just taken it and said, like, whatever the job is of a number one defenseman, I got that. Like, that's what Jake Sanderson is right now. I'm not saying he's better than Thomas Chabot. I don't want to have that conversation just yet. But I'm saying he's on the number one power play at times. He's also out there matching up against their team's best lines. He's also out there killing a ton of penalties. Like, what more does a number one defenseman do? Like, that's it, right? Like, that's what they do. And the fact that he's been so good this year has sort of slotted everyone else in different ways, whether it's ice time or usage, because Sanderson has a complete game that I did not think we would see this early in his career.
He's been tremendous. Like, yeah, you can't understate it. He can be signed to an extension as early as this year. He's still got a year to go on his rookie deal. I don't think the Sens, you know, they got ahead on a Stützle contract, and that was obviously a wise move.
Well.
Yeah, absolutely. Sanderson, I mean, he doesn't have the offensive numbers yet, but he's still in and around 30 points, which is not bad for a defenseman. Especially a guy who up until recently wasn't on the first power play. And now, you know, he wasn't there again last night. But you know, the points should go up.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about an 8-year contract for Jake Sanderson as soon as this summer, what do you think that number comes in at?
You know what? It's probably going to come in. I mean, you know, even this year where he hasn't played in the power play, he's still just under a half point a game. So let's say he's a 40-point defender with playing tough minutes, not getting all of his points on the power play, likely going to grow in stature and importance in production. I don't know. Is he Thomas Chabot? I imagine it's somewhere around Thomas Chabot's number.
Right.
I mean, I assume it's around $8 million or something like that. If they could get him in the sevens, they'd probably take him in the sevens. Like Thomas Chabot, he was off a 55-point season when he signed his deal or something like that. It's not like he's cranked out a whole bunch of 70-point years for his $8 million. So, yeah, it's another one of those guys. Like, you know, when Stützle signed his, you're like, I'm not sure. Could they be going early? But when you get it right and guys sort of hit after you sign that extension, you bank so much money in value of a contract. Like Tim Stutz is an $11 million player now, but they're paying him so much less than that, you know, they have extra money around their team because, you know, Stutz was not getting that much money, 8 1/3, whatever he makes next year. So trying to do the same thing for Sanderson. He probably won't ever be a 75, 80 point guy, maybe. But yeah, I think probably Thomas Chabot's contract or something thereabouts would maybe where he starts. Maybe 8 years, 60 million, 7.5 a year. And if you could get that, I don't know, do you lock him up like the rest of the core and say, okay, you're another one of the guys that we have that are going to be good when our team is good? I think he's a pretty safe bet given what we've seen this year.
Oh, 1,000%. I think he's Ottawa's best defenseman now, and he's doing that in his rookie year at 20. Yeah. Crazy. Just on future, I'm always fascinated by this. The Maple Leafs, well documented, of course, that this offseason will be going into the final year of both Austin Matthews and William Nylander, and the year after that, it's Mitch Marner. I don't think there's much doubt that the Maple Leafs will pay whatever it takes to keep Austin Matthews, and that may be, at that point, depending on what the cap is, $15 million or more a season. That's, you know, going to create issues further down. What do you think in terms of a number for William Nylander? He's had a terrific season, great season. He's performed in the playoffs the last couple of years, even though the team hasn't. If he wants to, he can break the bank. Are the Maple Leafs going to do that with him, do you think?
It's fascinating. Part of it will probably depend on what happens with Austin, what that contract negotiation goes like. But if they get Austin done at 12 or 13 or 14 or whatever it is, there might still be enough money for William Nylander to sign. You think about so he's not as good as David Pastrnak, right? Like, that's clear. That's never really in doubt. So Pastrnak signed for 11.25. That would be the ceiling. You look at the guys who signed in that $9 million range, 9.5, you know, the Mark Stone sort of players, the Panarin would probably be, you know, a bit above where he'd be. I've done this kind of comp already. He's not as good as Mitch Marner, a winger who makes 10 plus. He's probably in the 9.25 to 9.75 per year on a long-term deal, especially coming off this year where he's going to be, you know, 40 goals and 90 points, his best year of his career. Something like that. He's an analytically driven player. He does great numbers there. He's been good in the playoffs, as you mentioned. He's been relatively healthy. And we know, JR, that he's a guy who will stick his, you know, draw his line in the sand and say, I deserve this. I'm going to, you know, he already missed time negotiating his last contract, which turned out to be a great value contract for Toronto, despite the consternation about what they paid him. Like, he's going to demand what he wants, and he probably wouldn't be afraid to leave to go get it. So I don't know if there's any hometown discount coming, but I think, 9.5-ish around there. I don't know if he pushes 10. The thing is, John Tavares' contract is up 4 years after this one. So it really would be sort of the year of 24, 25 that would be a real problem because they still have Tavares' $11 million on the books. Once that comes off, then the Leafs can afford Nylander, Marner, and Matthews at big numbers. And the cap at that year should be 92, they hope. They hope it's 102 in Toronto, but it's probably 92. I think 9.5-ish for William Nylander. He deserves it, and he's going to get it from someone, but I think he probably gets it from Toronto.
Right. Okay. Last one for
you. Some of it, though, depends on the spring. Like, if they lose again this spring in the first round, then all bets are off. Like, I don't even know if they extend William Nylander until next year. Like, they probably bring him back, but they probably don't commit to the same group if they lose again in the first round long-term this summer.
Yeah, yeah, fair point. Last one for you. Rick Westhead reported on TSN last night that Hockey Canada says that all of the players on the 2018 World Junior team will not be eligible to play for any national team until the whole issue with the investigation in London is over and done with. Do you think that is, considering, you know, there is, you know, clouds around certain players to be sure, others, you know, have been, I guess, by their own words, cleared. What do you think about sort of casting as wide a net as they had on this? Was that really their only choice in this, in your opinion?
Legally, I don't know the legal ramifications, but to me it feels kind of unfair. And I'll just pick Victor Mete, for example, because, a lot of guys said, we didn't know, I didn't know, and you have to take it at face value. But Victor Mete is like, I wasn't even in the country when whatever happened or didn't happen occurred or didn't occur. So, like, how are you going to punish Victor Mete, who was on a vacation in Jamaica? Like that doesn't seem fair. The kind of blanket. Like, I get the idea. Like, until we get through this investigation, figure out what happened, clear everyone or not clear everyone, you know, then everyone can't participate. That doesn't seem fair. Now, having someone just said, I didn't do it, or I wasn't around, or I didn't know, that's probably not enough of a clearance by just someone saying it. But for guys who were, like, literally not there or out of the country or out of the pro, like, those guys probably have a pretty good case. Well, hang on, like, I should be able to play in the World Championships if, right, if I'm chosen to, because I had nothing to do with what is being investigated. It's a very sticky situation. I would think, though, you should be able to kind of clear guys one by one. Now, maybe they don't want to do that because it would shine a spotlight on the guys that haven't been cleared yet.
Yeah.
And sort of narrow the focus of attention on those players. And they may not want to do that, but I don't care. Like, I want, like, if I'm an innocent person, I want to be declared innocent and have all the opportunities that I should have based on the fact that I didn't do anything wrong. So it is, it's unfortunate. It's unusual, but it doesn't kind of strike me as entirely fair to the guys who are clearly, provably, innocent of whatever may or may not have happened.
Yeah. What's interesting is we got, you know, and this will impact the team that's chosen for the upcoming World Championships.
Yeah.
If you go, and that's mainly made up of players from teams that don't make the playoffs. And if you look at the top end players from that 2018 World Junior team, Cale Makar aside, he'll be in the playoffs, but it's Jordan Kyrou, it's Robbie Thomas, it's Drake Batherson, it's Carter Hart. It's all these guys that you would think would probably have a very good chance of being on the team now won't be. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's amazing the good players from that, and Dylan Dubé, the good players from that World Junior team would have been probable choices to go to the world. So anyway,
and I'm going to the world, and of course, like, as I'm going this time of year, of course I cover it, so like my mind starts filtering every game that I do. Like, oh yeah, this guy could be available. He would be a good pick. And without even knowing who's on the 2018 team, I've ran through the numbers, and the St. Louis guys were like, oh, yeah, those guys would be good, and Drake Batherson, he would be good to have there.
Right.
And apparently that won't be the case. So, yeah, hopefully they'll get it wrapped up, and whatever discipline is required, if there is some, it gets meted out by Hockey Canada and the legal system, and the guys who don't require any can be cleared completely of whatever sort of shadow is hanging over them for just being part of that team.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the time as always, MJ. We'll talk again on Thursday.
I will see you in Ottawa Thursday for Clevin's debut.
All right, sounds good.